right.
What are we talking about today?
What? I was just going to ask you that. What are we talking about today?
What's my subject? Well, I think we said we're going to talk about fear today.
It is fear. And you sent this to me in a message. You said something about how everyone is born with two main fears. Right. And I was like, for whatever reason, I was in a contesting mode.
Yes, you are.
What's the word?
She gets like that.
What's the word?
Argumentative. No,
what's the other word for it? You're
stubborn.
It starts with a C, not the four letter word. You know, when you're like argumentative, just for argument's sake, contrarian.
Oh God.
You didn't know that one?
No.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. I was being a contrarian.
Yeah.
Tell us, Free, about what are the two innate fears that everyone is born with?
So based on scientific research, we're born with two innate fears, which is one, fear of falling, and two, loud noises.
See, I find those to be really interesting things. I mean, obviously they're right. This was studied through psychology, but to have all the fears that we're born with,
if you actually think critically about it, and there's a survivor instinct.
But why then? Why isn't one of them being killed?
Because why are you being killed? That is instilled in you. You're not born with the fear of dying, but what you're born with is the fear of falling, which then might kill you. The fear of loud noises, which instantly tells you that there's something dangerous happening. Innate instincts that we're born with. And then every other fear is taught to us. Interesting enough, studies have shown most of our fears is not because we firsthand experienced an event and now we're traumatized by it. It's because we've witnessed or heard a third party experience it and now we're traumatized by it, which is even crazier to me.
I can attest to this because I spent my entire life never going on an airplane.
Right.
Up until I was 28 years old. So because my parents never took me on an airplane, whatever, life happened, I never got on one until I was 28. And by that point, I had built such a fear of flying that it was debilitating, truly. By the time I got on my first flight, I was so anxious, and that flight actually happened to have major turbulence. It was a short flight, but it had major turbulence, so that didn't help anything.
Right.
But I found that even being in the airplane for that first experience didn't help alleviate my fears of the unknown because mm-hmm. I had just built it up too high at right. that point. So it is such an unfamiliar feeling to someone who's never been in it.
Right.
That combined with all the fears that I had built up.
Or heard about.
Right. It was a scene.
I feel like, you know, there are certain fears that a lot of people have. Things like the dark or things like flying. But let's talk about some emotional fears. Commitment phobes. That's usually from fear of
Heartbreak. Do they develop that only after they've had heartbreak?
So this is where when I first read about the idea that most fears are absorbed by us through observing like a third party or from, you know, secondhand experiences, that's one of the things I thought about. I thought about, but what about relationship fears? Fears in a relationship. Mm-hmm.
They're fears, learned.
They're 100% they're learned. But then I was like, wait a minute. They're not talking about superficial. This is when people are like, oh, I have commitment issues because I've been traumatized from my boyfriend. It's usually not that. Confirmation bias, when an event happens and you associate it with that because you assume that there's a connection there. But usually when you dig deeper, it's stemming from things you have witnessed in your childhood, in your adolescence, in your relationship with your parents, your relationship with your grandparents, things like that, that on a subconscious level creates these fears.
When I experienced my first heartbreak, I right away was like, I never want to feel like this again. Mm-hmm. If I had to say to you, like, why did I develop that fear is because I experienced it. But if I dig deeper, the real reason I never want to experience that again is because the devastation of the first heartbreak was around my previous exposure to heartbreak, meaning my parents were separated and I witnessed my mom living alone in that sad life. And that's the life I didn't want. So I had a fear of being alone. Right. And that's why that heartbreak hit so hard, because it was hitting on all of those deeper fears. My fear of being alone.
Those, right?
Yeah. My fear of never getting married. My fear of never having kids, having that fulfilled life.
Yeah. Interesting. A few days ago, we off camera, we talked about something that you avoid conflict as much as you can. I do a little bit of coaching. A couple of girls I've spoken to, and they're so afraid to walk into their manager's office to just have basic dialogue. And I ask why. And a lot of it is because, and what if they get upset with me, or I don't want to cause drama. And I think to myself, what has happened in your life or in society or the things you were exposed to that you as a woman believe simply having a conversation that you were owed is going to create conflict? And a lot of that then stems from our childhood and the way our parents raised us. And so it's like, oh, you know, behave yourself. You watch your mom be a little bit more submissive to your dad. Or, and then I was like, oh, this shit goes deep.
It does. It does. I'm still kind of fixated on why we're not born with the innate fear of death. But I think I just need to research that a little bit more, because all of those things, like the fear of darkness, all those things are surrounding death.
Well,
I mean, for me at least.
That in itself is not actually scary. Death in itself is not actually scary.
Speak for yourself.
No. No, even you said this on one of our last podcasts. You said, when I'm crashing, when the plane is about to crash. Yeah, no,
but that was...
when you know, and a lot of people who are about to die.
When it's certain.
Right. It's the unknown that freaks us out.
Yes.
It's darkness. What is out there?
Right.
What kind of torture am I going to go through?
Yes.
It's that.
Yes.
That is scary. I don't know if you've been with anyone in their final moments. They look like they're the most peaceful human beings on planet Earth.
Well, this took a turn.
Huh? This podcast became morbid quick. Escalated.
Well, I think actually that makes sense, because as we were beginning this conversation, I was about to say, like, I'm the wrong person to be participating in this organic conversation about fear, because my entire life is surrounding anxiety and fear.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is my whole life.
Right.
I can think of a million different fears and anxieties. So
here, let me ask you this. We said there's two innate fears we're born with, mm-hmm. right? Fear of falling and loud noises. If we had to add a third one to this list, evolution changes. Like, even women, we said women are evolving in different ways. So do you think now, where we are now as human beings, there is a third innate fear that we're born with? And you can't say men or falling in love.
Okay, well. Okay, so I mean, when you do say born with, it's hard for me to say this one, but.
Yeah, you have to be born with it.
Okay, well.
That was the whole point of the question.
Okay, but hold on. No, but see, I'm going to contest this.
Okay.
Because.
What was the word? What was that word we said this morning?
Contrarian. It does. These fears don't make sense to a newborn. Okay. No, I've never met a newborn that's afraid of falling. So I'm contesting that.
No, but you have you Have you never done the newborn, like their test, like their instinct test?
As soon as a baby is about to start walking.
No. Before infancy. So like they're born out of their.
Yeah, but they're not afraid. They don't even know what the fuck's going on.
No, but so this is why they're able to conduct these studies, right? And so what happens is, like, for example, you drop the baby a bit, and like their instinct, right? Like literal biology, mm-hmm. is they lift their arms, right?
There's okay. Like
and so when we say they're innately born with it, and there's science research done, it's because there's certain, like, we have evidence that babies try to hold on to something.
Yeah, but how many babies have you watched try to walk and they fall head first?
No,
back into the.
That's different. That's not the fear of falling. That's like try dropping a baby.
Well, okay, actually, let's not try to.
Let's not do that.
Disclaimer.
Like, disclaimer. There's certain tests they do, right? And funny enough, a lot of these tests that doctors do on newborns, it actually. If they're not afraid of falling, let's say they don't raise their arms or like
it's a sign up. Of something.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Or like when they bang on the like their right. knee.
The reflexes.
Yeah. There's research saying we're born with them. And they're there. Scientifically, it's been proven that they're there to protect us.
So then, no, I don't think there's anything I can accuse a baby of fearing. But what I can say is we're predisposed, I think, via evolution now, mm-hmm. to be set up for certain fears when we get to a certain point in life. So the one I was going to say is fear of health failure.
But that's taught to you.
That's taught to you. But I think that there are certain things that we're born with, our own senses.
Pain,
like all right. of these things that can contribute to how fearful we become of these things.
Yeah, but that's taught to you.
Yes, so, yeah, and that's what I mean. Yeah. I don't think there's anything I can simply say.
Because if 1-year-old Cynthia gets a paper cut and 1-year-old Cynthia goes to mommy and daddy and says, oh, this really, really hurts. And mommy and daddy say, it's okay, sweetheart. It's just a paper cut. These things will happen to you in your life. You put a little bandage around it. The pain will last for X amount of minutes and it's going to go away. Or mommy and daddy say, oh my goodness, my baby, she's cut her arm, call daddy, she's bleeding to death. You are now afraid,
right,
of that small little paper cut pain.
Yeah.
Right? Because now it's like, oh my God, how long am I going to have this pain for? Mm-hmm. This is going to last a lifetime. I'm never going to be able to use my index finger again because I'm in so much pain.
Yeah.
5 minutes later, you forget about it. This goes back to how a lot of these traumas we experience later in life that we turn around and we say, well, no, I'm traumatized by that. If you dig deeper, you weren't actually traumatized by that. You were traumatized by it's a long lasting process of getting traumatized.
Right.
The heartbreak that you had when you were 16 or 18 or 21 or 26 or 30, that was just the cherry on the cake.
You weren't traumatized by the heartbreak. You were traumatized by the fear of being alone that was instilled in you
from an early age. Or the constant arguments,
yeah,
in a household that you were raised. Or
as soon as you get your heart broken, your first thoughts and instincts go back to your parents arguing and you're thinking, oh no, I'm back on the market again. I'm going to end up with someone just like my father.
Yeah.
And all of these things, these conversations start happening in your head.
Yeah.
Because the pain of being broken up with isn't just losing a person. It's like losing all of the idea of that future, yeah, relationship that you thought was going to be perfect and the answer to all of your other fears.
A lot of people, when they sit there and they're like, oh, I don't want to lose this person, or I don't want to lose this job, or I think a lot of people create like a very superficial fear for themselves. So for example, someone says, I'm afraid to lose this job. And you ask them why. And they're like, well, because like, what am I going to do? I'm not going to be able to find another job. Okay, what if I told you you would be able to find another job? Then what are you afraid of? A lot of people don't even know what their root fears are. Single mom who doesn't want to lose, or single dad who doesn't want to lose their job. Well, no, it's because like I need to make more money and I need to do this. It's like, okay, but why? Like, I encourage people to to push themselves, push your boundary and find out what it is. And chances are when you find out the real reason you're afraid, which could be, I don't want to lose the roof over my house, which is shelter. Not having shelter is a real fear, right? Guess what? Now, I promise you, the goals you have in life become even more attainable because you have now identified a root fear that you're able to now see. So I'm not afraid of talking to my boss. I'm not afraid of having a conversation. I'm afraid because X, Y, and Z consequences will lead me to lose my job, and then I can't pay my mortgage, and then blah, 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 so on and so forth, right? So when you then say, okay, this is your fear, and what is your goal? So this is your fear, but your goal is to have X amount of money. We've now identified these big things in your life that it's just easier to achieve your goals when you understand really what your fears are and what really your goals are. A lot of people have very superficial sense of like where they stand in life with those things.
Okay, but then what would you say to someone in this day and age where the job market is very difficult and they do speak out to their boss, and because in their mind they've calmed themselves down, they've said, no, but I can just go get another job.
Mm-hmm.
And they speak to their boss and they end up fired. And then they end up on the job market, which these days is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And they end up unemployed for a year and a half, 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen those people, right?
100%. 100%.
They're everywhere.
So I think like you have to take a few steps back. I would never want anyone or advise anyone or speak to anyone about speaking to their boss in a certain way that we know would result in termination.
But right? What if they know their boss better than the rest of us?
No.
Know a certain conversation is going to piss them off. What if then they work for the Wolf of Wall Street?
Yeah, but even the Wolf of Wall Street, there's a way of having a conversation.
I get it, but there's still room for failure.
I'm not saying that, but I promise you, more times than not, even if someone wants to fire you, you can push them to that point because of the way you're speaking. You can push people in a corner to make a decision because of your communication skills or lack thereof.
So, but that's what I'm saying. It's a risk, and that person may not want to take it.
No, but you can mitigate your risk with the way you speak, with the things you discuss, with being action oriented. And also, let's give some context here. You're not going to randomly go into your boss's office who's completely pissed off at you, who's going to terminate you anyway, and be like, I want a promotion.
Okay, but hold on. As a fear-based person, I'm not sure how this minimizes my fear. In this scenario, it actually maximizes my fear.
But like, talk the scenario out.
Okay. Well, because now we've identified my fear, which is now it's a focus. Now I'm really worried.
Mm-hmm.
Because before I was just afraid of losing my job.
Okay.
Now I'm afraid of losing my house.
Okay.
So now this is the focus. Now I even less want to take a risk.
But you're spiraling.
Because I don't want to. Right. But this is a reality.
Okay. But hold on.
For fear-based people.
I know. But just take a breath. Because you literally just linked losing your house with having a conversation with your boss.
You did that.
No.
Or me.
No, your mind did that.
No, but you just said, what's the root cause?
Okay.
And it's losing my house.
Perfect. So guess what? Now you have an underlying fear of losing your house. Now, this is just a fear. Nothing has happened.
Yes, but I'm just saying, why would I want to take risks?
Just take a breath.
Okay.
Just hold on. Hear me out. This is not your underlying fear.
Mm-hmm.
So now we say, okay, why are you in the mindset of fearing that you're going to lose your job?
Let's say I'm miserable at my job and I need to make my situation better, or I need to leave the job.
Okay, so
there's no way out either way.
But you didn't answer the question.
Okay.
Why are you afraid of losing your job? Has your boss?
Yeah, let's say they are a toxic person, and any outspeaking that an employee would do, they would terminate.
Okay,
yeah.
So in this case, I would probably say, have you like tiptoed around a conversation with them, like feel the waters, and if you insist that no, they're so toxic that even if I speak up, then the method to that is, okay, do your work. If you're doing your work, will they fire you? If they're doing your work and meeting your actions,
no,
will they
fire you? No, but that person's still miserable.
Okay, so continue being miserable.
Right.
But in the meantime, you can, in parallel, you can find other things you can do. I'm not in agreement with you that lack of communication is the way to go. I just don't believe that. Mm-hmm. And I've dealt with many Wolf of Wall Streets, and I've dealt with many terrible, terrible clients, bosses. There's always a way of communicating that doesn't result in a harsh, assertive, aggressive outcome, especially if you're going in very vulnerable and you're going in not in a protesting way, not in a I'm unhappy, but in a way of I love my job. I love what I do. I love helping people. I want to sit down with you and see what kind of feedback I can get from you. People love giving feedback. Nobody will ever terminate you if you're asking them to coach you, if you're asking them to give you feedback.
So taking fears into relationships, this applies pretty much the same way in relationships, because I had a fear of being alone for the longest time, which led me to stay in relationships that I shouldn't have been in for the longest time. And it was exactly that scenario. I had to identify what my real fear is and why I just kept staying in relationships that weren't for me. And ultimately, the fear was being alone.
Right.
And I think once I finally became actually alone, I realized that it wasn't so bad. Mm. But it's not like magic.
No.
It doesn't go away forever. I still have that fear of me sitting in a rocking chair when I'm 80 years old and like having no one beside me, because for whatever reason, when you're old and alone, it's just like more, there's something about it that's scarier. More sad and scary. Yeah,
totally.
So that fear is still there for the future. But I think the main difference for me is that I'm not as desperate for it to happen immediately like I was previously.
Okay.
Now that has its downsides. Because I'm not in an urgent state to get connected to someone, I lack motivation to actually do it. That in itself is almost a learned fear and a learned,
it's
a
behavior.
Fear. It's a learned behavior, because previous to this, every person I've tried has just ended in complete shambles. And I know this is similar to literally everyone's experiences.
You walked, touch fire, got burnt. And you said, it's okay, I'll do it again. Walk, touch fire, got burnt again. Yeah. It's okay, I'll do it again. And then the 10th time you're like, this is now learned behavior.
Yeah. I'm more peaceful alone.
And when I don't try and cook, it's okay.
Yeah.
I might starve to death.
Yeah.
But at least I'm not in pain.
Yeah. Sorry. The benefit of dating is outweighed now by the cost of it. This podcast could go a number of ways, because I've got all the fears.
Yeah.
You name a fear, I've got it.
You just said your fear was to die alone, right?
Yeah.
Or one of you.
It's actually the process before dying alone. It's those 15, 20 years where you're kind of not able to do anything more than Scrabble.
Right.
And do a crossword, which I'm terrible at.
I was on a date and I asked the guy, what's your biggest fear in life? And his response was that he said to die alone.
Ooh.
And he asked me the same question.
Okay.
And I said, to love someone so much and lose them.
Ooh.
The thought of loving someone to the amount that I think I can love. And then something happens to them the next day. I'm not talking about a slow death or like, but you instantly lose them. A car accident or something awful.
This is definitely true about you, because we did have a conversation once where we were talking about, I think it was a husband who lost his wife and three kids in one shot in an accident. And we were talking about how tragic that must be for the remaining family member. And you were just saying to me, like, I don't know how I would be able to continue on after that. And that was really the only time I remember thinking, I don't feel not jealous of people very often. But in that moment, I was actually kind of proud of myself that I felt, okay, well, this is the one fear that although it would be devastating for me, I didn't feel like I would be as devastated as you. And I really underline that. Trust me, I would be absolutely crushed and devastated. But perhaps because I've gone through this really big roller coaster, which I have taken myself on because of my fears, because my fears are so intense about being alone, I've gone through really high highs and really low lows with love. And now I'm in the phase of my life where I am face to face with the fear of being alone. And I've been having to actually confront it and deal with it. And I've been having to actually do that work.
And I think a lot of the things you've been through have made you a stronger person. When I say strong, I don't mean cold or bitter or anything like that. I don't think that's tainted you. I don't think your experiences or the pain you've experienced has tainted you. But I think it's made you stronger in a sense that you realized even when you're shattered, when your heart is shattered, you're able to breathe. You're able to continue. Because of like my first great love and how I did eventually, but if I loved someone that much when I was like 21, I think about how much I'm going to love my person, like my husband. And I'm like, if I love them anymore, and then instantly, I'm not talking about a breakup. I'm not talking about they were like, I don't want to be with you anymore. No, I'm talking about you. You're in the midst of your high love. You're just right on the mountain and then they fall and you just never see them again. You don't get the goodbye. You don't get the closure. You don't get any of it. You just lose them. You take a breath and you lose them. And that is like, oh, that freaks me out. So anyway, there are other people in the world who are afraid of dying alone, just like you.
Fears control us.
Yeah. Yeah, they 1,000% control. They limit you. They are your limitations. It's the reason why people don't take risks. It's the reason why people get stuck in bad situations. A lot of it, again, it's taught to us. It's from a young age we're exposed to it, which is unfortunate. With the right parenting and with the right environment, a lot of our fears, we would just be more confident people, right?
I think a lot of us would just be generally happier.
And happier. Confidence does bring you happiness. When you feel confident in yourself, and, you know, knock on wood, one good thing my parents did is instill a little bit of confidence in us. And it's the reason why I can literally go and sit in any table and have a conversation and shake anyone's hand and know that I belong in the room. It's exactly because of what they taught me. It's like, so what if you look like an idiot? Who cares? What's going to happen? You think you're the most important person in that person's life that in 1 hour from now, they're going to remember your foolishness? No.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a good way to be. I think it's also a good way to influence other people. I think it's hard and sometimes impossible for some people to fully adapt to that kind of way of thinking. But I think in general, just being that person and spreading that way of being is a good thing. And I'm thinking about all those influencers on TikTok who come out and they're just like, be strong, you know, like don't take this bullshit from your partner. If they treat you this way, walk away. That's what I would do. You know, and I think a lot of people watch that and they're like, yes, okay, I can be stronger. They may never be that person that walks away, but it may actually help them feel better to be influenced by the strength of others.
Yeah, and I agree. I think energy is very contagious, and I think when you're around strong, confident, positive people who are always about uplifting, you I'm not saying you become that. Because if innately that's not you, I agree, like you might not get to exactly where they are, but it lifts you up. It lifts your spirit up. You know, the woman who's always keeping her head down because she's upset about something or she feels down because she's insecure. She's been being pushed down by society or their partner or whatever, life. She starts lifting her head up a bit. She starts waking up in the morning and thinking, oh, you know what? I do look cute today. I am going to put my makeup on because it makes me feel sexy. I am going to, you know, make eye contact with someone in the store because she always has her head down. And so those are the positives that I think come out of those videos and these influencers. It's great to instill positivity in people, but don't make them feel ashamed if they're not doing it. Because as you said, it's a process.
I think this is what it is about imaginary worlds, paranormal things, astrology. Those things can uplift people. At its very base, you strip them down, the belief in ghosts, the belief in the Ouija board, the wishes that you put into it, the belief in these tarot cards, all of these things, if you strip it down, it's just instilling some kind of hope and uplifting spirit into people, just as you would get if you're watching that TikTok person who is much stronger than you will ever be,
right?
May ever be. You're just able to take those few seconds and live in this imaginary world and be this imaginary version of yourself,
yeah,
where you are stronger, and it helps uplift you.
That's literally the reason why the 5-year-old kid can imagine he's LeBron James, he's Michael Jordan, and then somehow through growing up that gets less and less, and then we lose our dreams and our imagination and our creativity, and then fear takes over.
And this is ultimately what can control you. I used to date someone who was really into video games, and specifically the fantasy world games, like the Final Fantasies. There was really beautiful scenery that you got to walk through as your character. But then ultimately, there was a whole bunch of storylines that just made the whole experience of game playing beautiful. But what's funny is he was also a person that was very anti like tarot card readers, astrology. I used to say to him, like, why does this bother you so much? Like, it's, these people aren't infiltrating your world. But anyways, I think the real question I should have asked him was, you know, how is that different from you escaping into these worlds? And I think probably he would have contested that. He probably would have had an argument back for that, and fine. From the way I see it as very similar things. I think there are definitely people who take things to an extreme, and that's where things can get dangerous, right?
Yeah.
If you believe too much in the tarot card readers, if you believe too much that astrology influences your life, anything extreme is going to take a negative toll on you and the ones around you.
1,000% I agree. And you said it perfectly. I think anything, I'm emphasizing anything and everything extreme is unhealthy. What, even fitness freaks taken to an extreme is unhealthy. Funny enough, what's a very common characteristic or trait that we see in people who are extremists? Hypocrisy.
Yes.
They all have it.
Right. And it just... I mean, to be clear, if you are a hypocrite, you aren't necessarily an extremist.
No.
But the quality of an extremist.
But I'm saying.
Yes.
I'm not saying a hypocrite is an extremist.
Because we're
I'm
all hypocrites.
Most extremists also possess that trait in them. And it's, and often it stems from just them thinking they're so correct and set in their way, and that if anyone else is doing something that isn't like them, it's incorrect. Meanwhile, they're literally doing what they're pointing their finger at.
Yeah.
It just in a different way. Just like your ex who sat there, you know, saying, oh, I mean, I don't believe in that world of tarot card reading and stuff. Instead of just saying, tell me more about it. Oh, interesting. Even if it's for fun.
It is for fun.
But let's say you were someone who took it a little bit more seriously. Right. And he's just like, you know what? I'm not really into it, but it'd be fun to get my palm read. It would be fun to do a card reading. I wonder what they're going to say.
Yeah, that's funny because actually one of the last things that we argued about was exactly that. We were arguing about the cultish culture of groups like surrounding celebrities like Taylor Swift and all that stuff. Mm. And I said, you know, what's wrong with loving a celebrity and loving their lyrics and their music and their whole way of being and just like the representation of who they are? What's wrong with that? And he said, well, you know, he was pointing toward the extreme of the cult or just cults in general.
Yeah.
But again, I could point the finger right back at the fans of the Final Fantasy world that are cultish because they're definitely out there.
Or sports fans.
That too.
That they travel, go into debt to travel to watch a sports team who gives them zero benefit back.
Some of them become violent. But see, the point is notice how neither of us are saying like, no, this is absolutely wrong. And like we're going after certain things and saying, no, the only solution to make this world better is if you eliminate games that have shooting in them. Like we are not those people because we are not extremists. And yes, I am saying that even those people who think that they have identified a solution and go all in on that one thing.
I think
that is an extremist as well.
100%. 100%. And that's the definition. It's you putting on your blinders and you going full-fledged on a particular idea or belief,
That's not helping anything either.
No.
I mean, sometimes it could have a positive influence. We just saw that recently with the blocking movement of celebrities who weren't speaking out about certain political issues. And I think a lot of that did have a positive influence because guess what? They raised a lot of money for a lot of different families. But I think at a certain point, it became so focused on just the gratification of blocking celebrities and making their lives worse. And that became the focus. And I think a lot of people saw that because the conversation really turned into that. And yet again, the conversation switched from what it was intended on being to this entirely other giant beast of celebrity culture and all of this other stuff.
Yeah.
So again, something that people had too major of a focus on, of course, became diverted because when you're too polarizing and when you are too dead set in your ways on, no, this is the solution to this and this is all it can ever be, then
you're not creating room for dialogue.
Exactly.
And the only way, and you know, whatever type of relationship you're in, whether it's a fan-based relationship, whether it's a romantic relationship, a friendship, a employee-employer relationship, whatever it is, the fundamental key to success is the dialogue, right? And that's it. That's what it comes down to. And the dialogue might be a very constructive conversation that, hey, this isn't working. We're no longer a good fit, whether it's a work situation or a friend situation, but there's a dialogue happening. It's not me saying, you better do this, and if you don't do it, you're wrong or you're a bad person. Because what's your response to that? Like, when people speak to me this way, this is why I'm just like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I will not ever waste my breath on someone who says something like that to me. Mm-hmm. My response will be, oh, okay. You're probably right.
Yeah. No point.
And if it's someone I care about, let's say, and a topic comes up, I will try to say, well, I'd love to understand why you have such a strong stance. I'd love to understand where you're coming from. I'd love to understand what brought you here. But if your response to me continues to be ignorant and closed, then you are not creating a space where I even want to interact with you. So I say, okay, you're right. You want to continue believing you're right? Take it.
There's a reason why we made this setup a podcast, because we knew that the only way to have these kind of enlightening conversations was going to be having conversations.
Yeah.
Having dialogue. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people roll their eyes at everyone and their mother is creating a podcast. Yeah. But there's a reason for a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And that's because you're trying to have a productive conversation. You can't have that with just one person in front of a mic.
Yeah. An outcome doesn't always have to be the solution. Sometimes it's just, and you and I have had conversations off camera just with ourselves where we don't get to a resolution, right? Mm-hmm. But we talk about things, we talk through it. You go your way, I go my way. But it got our brains moving a bit. Exactly. Right?
I would argue that we never really come to a resolution.
No, we don't necessarily, I don't necessarily turn around and say, I do. There's some stuff that I'm like, yeah, actually, you know what? You have a good point. You're right.
Right.
Okay. So Cynthia believes that if someone like does something to hurt you, it doesn't mean they're a bad person. And I agree with that. That concept in itself, I believe, and I agree with. But I think when you bring in intent, and when there's intent involved of them hurting you, then I don't think they're a good person.
So let's let's save this because we just got our word for the next podcast. Yeah. Intent.
So this is something that her and I have talked about, I think like months.
Because at nauseam.
It gets brought up a lot in our life, right? And her and I have our views, which we will go into on our next podcast. But we walk away. We make our points. Mm-hmm. We walk away every time. Not necessarily being on the same page, but at least being able to talk about it.
Yeah.
Constructively.
It's healthy.
And every time you learn a little bit more about me, and every time I learn a little bit more about you, and even to the point where sometimes I'm like, oh, you know what? I need to expand this a little bit more, because she does make a good point about that. It's not necessarily she's right on it, but she makes a good point. Critically think about it and see if there's room in my stance for it.
It's helping develop our critical thinking.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which we all need to do.
Yes. Well...
Well,
great chat.
It was a great chat.
Yet again, we did not solve the world's problems.
I mean
just when are we ever going? That should be our sign off, probably. That's great. We just found our sign off.
Do it.
Yes. Am I keeping this in? The fact that I've just been
Okay. We gotta keep it in.
Okay.
This is the moment it happened.
Well, yet again, we did not solve the world's problems.
Have a good night.